Spa. One syllable that speaks volumes. One syllable that evokes other legendary names. La Source, Lecombe, Eau Rouge, Blanchement, Bus Stop, Pouhon, Stavelot. The Formula One break is over, and it's time for the drivers to get down to business. And their office? Spa Francorchamps, site of the Belgian Grand Prix, and the one race that is on every driver's to-do list. A fabled circuit tucked amongst the trees of a Belgian forest. As the drivers get back to work, they will get worked here. Vertical compression, vertical lift, lateral loads, blind corners, negative camber, yet with the feeling of actually going somewhere. This makes Spa-Francorchamps a driver's and fan favorite. Many years ago, young Michael Schumacher took a chance on some tires and ended up taking his first victory with Benetton here. Today, Uncle Schumacher, now sporting crow's feet, celebrates his 300th Grand Prix here at the circuit he calls his living room. The current drivers' championship leader, El Rey de Ferrari Alonso, has never won here. Considered one of the luckiest drivers in F1, will he luck out or will his luck run out? Who will be crossing a win at Spa off of their list of things to do? And who will be making the sign of the cross? Stay tuned, mes chers auditeurs, c'est Désiré, et c'est votre racecast F1Weekly.com. Au revoir.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 599, September 5th, 2012. Nasser?
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by a new face in Formula One, Romain Maldonado. Merci, muchachas.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, is Romain Grosjean being fairly treated? What was Hamilton thinking while he was tweeting? And why Lotus can't make that final leap to victory? Of course, we have Motorsports Mondial with the king, Nasser Hamid, and we'll wrap it up with 50 words from the forum. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Enjoying a Monday off here in USFA and looking forward to final day of work before my vacation. So very happy and very excited. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I am wrapping up my southern excursion to the deep south. I've gotten all my business here taken care of. Now I'm having some leisurely time where I can go about watching truck races in the mud.
Yes, when you are going to the airport, please stop for some grits to go.
Absolutely, and the trick with grits is always get them with cheese.
Ah.
That's my tip of the day, Nasser.
Thank you, sir.
Anyway, so there you have it. Outstanding Belgian Grand Prix. A lot to talk about, but did you enjoy the racing activities in beautiful Spa-Francorchamps?
Well, thank you so much for asking me this question, and the simple answer is yes. And, you know, I was so excited on Saturday night that I even watched on NBC Sports a little bit of PBR, and I'm not talking about the beer. I'm talking about professional bull riding. I was just like waiting and waiting. And then through the magic of, I don't know, fifth sense or seventh sense, I get up at 1:30 in the morning and just in time for the Hoppy House race. So I watched that first and then, of course, watched the Formula One race. Wow, what a start.
What a start. What an exciting race. Just to sum it up, great pole position by Jenson Button. I was stunned, having predicted in the previous podcast that he would not find a good setup. Of course, I was also hoping that Kimi Raikkonen might get pole. But in the end, a great feat by Jenson Button on his 50th Grand Prix weekend with McLaren. I was pretty surprised that Jenson Button pulled it off.
No, I was not surprised. Lately, McLaren has been showing some speed. And what really surprised me that this was his first pole position since leaving Brown Grand Prix.
That's true, and that I believe that first pole, I mean that pole position at Braun was at Monaco 2009.
Yes, so first pole in with McLaren in 2.5 years, but, you know, better late than never.
No, I agree. And also, for me, the other really big excitement was Kamui Kobayashi on the front row.
Yeah, that was very, very impressive, and also his teammate.
Yeah, no, the team did well. Very fast, and when you're out qualifying Fernando Alonso, you're doing fine.
Oh, yeah, quite a few, and this was the first Japanese on the front row since Sato-san. So that brought back some memories of great days.
Yes, no, I thought it was exciting, and of course, Pastor Maldonado, P3, another great accomplishment from him. Of course, he got penalized 3 places because I think he was blocking somebody in Q1. It could have been Nico Hülkenberg. I can't remember the small details.
Well, they were making a documentary on the qualifying, and Pastor Maldonado was playing himself.
Exactly.
So he had to get into some issue.
I know. And, of course, coverage over here is a bit spotty for the Formula One race, but luckily I was able to find a place with Speed Channel. So I was pretty happy. But anyway, the race, very, very exciting, but, of course, extremely controversial with the huge accident at the beginning. What were your thoughts? What was going through your mind when you saw this horrendous accident?
Well, you know, it was pretty serious business, and first thought, as always, is for the safety of the drivers and, you know, people who are working there. And when Nanda was not jumping out of the car,
I know.
I was really concerned. And then good news is everybody is okay. But I'm sure you're going to ask me about the penalty. So shall I answer that question now, or shall I wait?
You can wait. But, I mean, there were some interesting comments after the race about the incident. But still, once again, Romain Grosjean, or as you now have dubbed him, Romain Maldonado, this is his 7th accident this season.
Right.
Are we in trouble? Is he in trouble? Is he going to be gone next year? And do you think that one race ban is just too much?
Okay, I don't think he'll be gone. He's a very good driver, very good talent. You know, the team is owned by Jenny Capital. They also were in the driver management business, and he is one of their clients. So I think he deserves to be in Formula One this year and next year. So I think he will survive. But as far as this accident is concerned, you know, I don't know. I can say a lot of things on this. First, let me address the penalty issue. It may be harsh, but it's about time something like this is done. Because, you know, when you sit down a Formula One Grand Prix driver, other drivers in the same series and below will take notice. Okay, this can happen. I'll tell you, Clark, what, having followed the business as a racing fan for many, many years, I was watching an IndyCar race many years ago, and I think it was in Toronto, for sure somewhere in Canada, and there was a very late race, caution, okay? And when the race started, there were only a few laps remaining. Stefan Johansson, you know, who raced in Formula One also, he kind of tried to make some, you know, places and move to the right, and I'm sure it was done as a racing, you know, thing, not with any malicious intent. And his front wheel hit the rear wheel of a car driven by a kid from Southern California, Jeff Krosnoff. And his car went into the fencing just like poor Dan Weldon, and he was killed.
Wow.
And I have seen stuff like this, and it's just, you know, in Formula One, these kind of accidents at the start should not be happening. And especially, you know, if you look at Spa, I mean, this is not like a track where there's a long straight before the first turn. I mean, the first turn is very tight, and if you're cutting right across, and something like this happened, something has to be done. And I'm going to tell you, if you recall the Eddie Irvine suspension from a race or two in 1994, after the accident in Brazil, the Brazilian Grand Prix, which was a pretty scary accident, on GrandPrix.com, which you can still Google and read this article, and you know, GrandPrix.com, they are the suppliers of data to Formula One official website. So these people are very experienced journalists. They know what they're talking about. And there was an article after the suspension of Eddie Irvine from the Brazilian, after the Brazilian Grand Prix, saying that this is very harsh and motor racing is so safe. There has been no fatality in over a decade. They should not do this thing. And the next race after the 1994 Brazilian Grand Prix was the San Marino Grand Prix at Imola. And I don't need to remind anybody what happened there. So I personally, I don't like the idea of these cockpit covers. Open wheel racing is open wheel racing. But I think it's about time that message needs to be handed down to racing drivers. You can't do these things.
Right. No, I thought Grosjean was overly aggressive. On the other hand, I thought that Hamilton maybe should have given him, or actually just backed off and let Grosjean by, because we're barely into the first lap here. This is, I don't know. And the problem is, when you have Hamilton and Grosjean next to each other, it could get pretty sparky.
I really don't want to apportion X percentage to Hamilton or to Romain Grosjean. Mm-hmm. This is beyond who is responsible. I think it's pretty obvious who was at fault.
Right.
You know, when you're traveling at that speed, I mean, like, it's easy to say Hamilton to slow down. There is no time to slow down at such a high speed.
Right.
When there is, car is traveling so fast.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, killer accident. I was glad Fernando Alonso was well. In the end, nobody was hurt, and the safety car came out until lap 5. And finally, racing resumed. Button held the lead. A really great start from Button. Outstanding. I was thinking this could be Kimi Raikkonen's big chance.
And, you know, let me just bring up one more safety issue. You know, we've always heard that these Formula One wheels, they have tethers and they cannot break away, blah, blah, blah. But I saw that wheel taking off.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah. I did.
So I think they're going to take a hard look at the whole safety situation again.
Yeah, no, and enclosed cockpits are going to be coming into play, or actually some kind of hoop or roll bar that's going to be going over the driver's head. One or the other is definitely coming to play. Yeah. Anyway, Maldonado, he suffered some damage, and he pulled off at Lacombe on lap 5 with a damaged front wing, so he was out. Raikkonen, I don't know. He was having trouble with his tires at the beginning of the race, and I was a little disappointed once again with all the talk, and I even said it, and all the data really showed and pointed in that direction that Lotus was going to be the one to watch, and once again, they failed us. Now, of course, Grosjean was out, and Kimi Raikkonen had a lot of pressure to bear being the only Lotus there, but still, I was a little disappointed with how the Lotus was performing in the first stint before he came in for pit stops.
Well, you know, the Lotus thing is, like you said, they just cannot get to the next level. They are becoming like the Rubinho of teams.
Exactly.
Good enough to be good second driver. But as far as Maldonado is concerned, I did not watch the race again, but I don't think there was much coverage of him colliding. Actually, he collided, I think, with the
Timo
Glock, and has been handed a 5-grid penalty for that. And of course, he also jumped a start when the clutch slipped from his fingers.
Correct. But still, like you say, Lotus is becoming the Rubinho of, let's say, the top 5 teams. And I just can't wait till they get a win so we can get this behind us. But nevertheless, Kimi Raikkonen does keep up somewhat with the leader, but the McLaren was just outpacing everyone, and it was very impressive. By lap 7, Button already had almost a 4-second lead clear of Hülkenberg and Raikkonen. For some reason, Raikkonen fell asleep a little bit. Hülkenberg got around him, and of course, Hülkenberg started the race on the hard compounds, and I have to admit, Hülkenberg looked strong.
Yeah, and you know, Button Space with the McLaren, this is, since I want to see you happy at the end of the season, this is what my concern is for Nando's third championship, is that with, you know, a few races remaining, whatever is remaining, if a team, especially McLaren or Red Bull, can bring this kind of pace to every race, then he has to watch out for Sebastian Vettel, who has ruined his party once before, and also for his ex-teammate.
Yeah. No, it could be Abu Dhabi all over again. What I found very interesting is not only was really Button all by himself in front, great pace, almost 6 seconds a lap, 6 seconds ahead by lap 10. It was very impressive, but Hülkenberg gets repassed by Raikkonen, who goes into second place. Kobayashi, what a miserable start for him. He had to, which is lucky, because if Kobayashi had a really good start, he either would have been in the accident or he would have been ahead of the accident. But, and it was strange how his wheels were smoking.
Yeah.
At the front of the grid. I'd never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of like this, remember when Jaguar team made their debut in Australia?
Yeah.
And, or was it the Stewart team? One of those teams, you know. And both cars were smoking pretty badly.
Correct.
In that case, was the type of paint they had used was melting or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. No, and of course, the biggest incident at the beginning of this race that was very interesting was Pastor Maldonado's fantastic start. I mean, everybody was convinced he had jumped the start, but he didn't.
No, that's what it looked like. They replayed and replayed and everybody, but obviously since he has, once I heard his comment saying that I jumped the start because my clutch was slipping, so I figured that there will be a penalty and the timing must show that he jumped the start.
Yeah, and Charlie Whiting was shaking his head. I think he believed he jumped the start, but he didn't. It was just perfect, perfect, perfect. He had slipped the clutch accidentally, but in the end gave him a fantastic start. And, of course, he had to go around Kobayashi because Kobayashi had a miserable, miserable start. Another great start for Michael Schumacher, who started 13th and I believe was in 5th place by lap 10. Very impressive for Shumi. Shumi loves Spa, and it's pretty exciting to watch him. Now, we predicted Petrov might come in and do something weird, but never happened.
Yeah, and talking of Schumacher, you know, I mean, what a place for him, Spa. That's where he made his debut. And I just would like to mention, you know, just for laughs, that here's a guy who now charters a Boeing 767 to go to Dubai, and traveling on the plane are him and his wife and 2 kids. And when he made his debut with Jordan, they forgot to, or part of the deal, Jordan being Jordan, did not book a room for him, hotel room. So he had to stay in a youth hostel when he made his Grand Prix debut.
That's beautiful. And that would be 1991.
That is correct.
Yes.
That's where he won his race, first race. It's a lot of history for him there.
Yeah, no doubt. And of course, this weekend was his 300th Grand Prix start, joining the ranks of his loving former teammate, Rubinho.
Yeah, and now we have a 2-legged Rubinho, 4-legged Rubinho, and a 4-legged F1 car.
Yep. Now, what was really exciting also, there was a lot of excitement for me in this race, is how well Danny Ricciardo was doing.
Yeah, I mean, he has done a good job, and his teammate, Jean-Éric Vergne, your homeboy.
Yeah.
They also, he was also pumping, a pretty good performance.
Yeah, Ricciardo was 9th on lap 15th, 4.5 seconds behind Kimi Raikkonen. And Paul De Resta, he was doing well. He was still in 10th place on lap 15, and Mark Webber was right behind him in 11th place. Of course, Mark Webber had to overcome a 5-spot grid penalty, which made Alonso very, very happy. And the sad part with Alonso being out of the race, of course, this really opened up the championship to Sebastian Vettel, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah. I, you know, but when Nando was out, I had no idea who's going to finish where. But, you know, with Sebastian Vettel coming in second, I think this was the little opening of the door that Sebastian Vettel needed. And if they can provide him a car that can go very quick,
right?
He sure can. You know, another guy who can do the damage is, of course, Lewis Hamilton. But Lewis Hamilton, you know, if there are three races to go, it's hard to believe he can finish all three of them. You know, he has a little. Somewhere in his previous life, he must have traded pains with Maldonado and Grosjean, I think.
That's what it is. Keep up the good work, Nasser. I like that. Lap 19, Raikkonen is now almost 6 seconds behind Sebastian Vettel, who's in fourth. Of course, everybody is pitted for tires. Now, a lot of one-stoppers in this race, and of course, it's a long lap, only 44 laps in Spa.
Yeah, the one-lap strategy was kind of a surprise for me.
The one-lap penalty?
The one-lap, the one-tire change.
Yeah, I thought that was surprising too, and I was hoping Kimi Raikkonen could do a one-lap tire change, but he just couldn't. He had to do two, which dropped him back. And
yeah.
But luckily, kept him close to the podium. Lap 21, Petrov is 14th, your buddy. Timo Glock is 15th. Karthikeyan, 16th. Pedro de la Rosa, 17th. And Charles Peak is 18th. And Kovalainen not having a very good day. In dead last because of only 19 cars left on the track. Now, there was some pretty good pit action as well.
Uh-huh.
I was very impressed. Lotus had a very, very nice pit stop, 2.6 seconds.
Yeah, that was very quick.
It was very quick. I really enjoyed it. Any moments in the race that stand out for you?
No, like you said, there was a lot of dicing going on. And, of course, you know, they mentioned quite a few places that the TV did not show Jenson Button most of the race, and why would you show a guy running by himself anyway?
That's true.
So, no, I did enjoy the, it was good to see Hulkenberg finish the race. I liked that. And finally, Felipe Massa, that was the biggest surprise. Finally, he finished the race ahead of Alonso.
Yeah.
So I'm happy for him. But I was very happy to see Jean-Éric Vergne and Daniel Ricciardo
in the top 10.
Yeah, and I would hate to see either of them get the chop because I think they are both very good drivers. And, and Bruno Senna was there and it was good. I mean, it was a really exciting race.
Yeah. And, another exciting moment for me was the little fight between Schumacher and Vettel as Vettel and Schumacher were dicing it up, Schumacher going across in front of Vettel and diving for the pit lane.
That really surprised me to go and outbrake so hard. And when you are going, if he knew he was going into the, taking a lot of chances if you, go wheel to wheel like that, 5 seconds before you're going into
the pits.
Or the pit stop. Yeah, that was kind of a surprise, but I did like the way quick turn that Sebastian Vettel did to stay on the track and not going to the pits.
Yeah, and for a moment there, I was thinking that maybe Vettel wanted to go to in the pits as well, but with Schumacher pulling that strange trickery, he couldn't, and obviously Schumacher barely made it into the pits. And technically, the FIA were going to investigate this after the race, but I haven't heard anything come of it.
Yes. Well, what they said on the broadcast was that Sebastian Vettel was instructed to do just the opposite of Schumacher. If he's pitting, you stay out. If he's staying out,
you
go into the pit. So don't know. I guess both of them were. See, this is what happens when you don't have an open mind.
Right.
You just don't know what to do. To go into the pits or not. So they need to get on the Steve Farr program.
Yeah. And another great moment for me in the race was the way Kimi Raikkonen passed Schumacher right before going up to Eau Rouge.
Yeah, this is something.
It was very, remember Mark Webber doing it to Fernando Alonso?
Yes.
A couple of years ago?
Yeah, that's what we call a digital rub-in.
Is that what that is?
Sí, señor.
Oh, gracias, muchacho. But no, I thought that was a very nice move by Raikkonen. Very creative way to get by the Rainmeister.
I tell you, man, this Kimi Raikkonen, him and Nando was obviously a victim of an accident this time. But you very rarely see these people make silly and stupid mistakes.
Have no, you're absolutely right. And I felt so bad for Fernando because, like you say, the top guns, the professionals, they do a fantastic job, and certainly Romain Grosjean will be pondering that when we get to Monza. But in the end, this was a, not only a great, exciting race, there was some good passing, there was some interesting tidbits. We had some Maldonado, we had too much Grosjean, and Toro Rosso did an outstanding job. Great job for Sebastian Vettel finishing second. Now he's 24 points behind Fernando Alonso. Jenson Button has a long way to go. I believe he's the 11th down in the Drivers' Championship. I don't have any stats in front of me, but I believe that's what it is.
Talking of Button, you know, he is also one of those guys, do not make silly and stupid mistakes, I have to say. But, you know, the thing is, the problem with McLaren drivers, they both want to become world champion, and now with Jensen winning and coming back into the scene, I think what's going to hurt them is both will take points from each other, as has happened a few times in the history of Formula One. So the man that, I got to tell you, if Sebastian Vettel finishes ahead of Fernando Alonso at Monza, then Nando has got a huge problem.
Well, I know one thing. Fernando Alonso, Monza, Ferrari, Montezemolo, and the Pope all add up to one thing. And that's going to be Ferrari dominance.
Well, you know, that's what everybody said in 2007, and it was Nando and Hamilton 1-2 in a silver car in 2007. But we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. Don't forget what happened in 2010. Fernando on the top step. But still, a great race. I really enjoyed this. Now, let's talk quickly about the frustration that Lewis Hamilton felt walking back to the pits, didn't take his helmet off after the accident, and kept a piece of his front wing in his hands. I couldn't figure out what was going on in his head.
Well, you know, I cannot look into his head, so I don't know what was going on. And carrying a piece, I don't know what the importance of that was. But here's a guy who was really dejected, and of course, I don't think he spoke to the media till after the race.
Correct. Yeah, he even said that he had to get his head straight on before he could speak to anybody. And I think that's definitely a wise decision.
And as far as Lewis is concerned, you know, he had this Twitter gate going on. Do you want to talk about it after the race?
I was just going to ask you about that because this is, I think, leaning on the bizarre.
Well, you can mention to for those who may not know as to what happened there.
Yes. I mean, he tweeted, the car's geometry.
He tweeted the setting of the wings for both cars, you know, because he went with a different option than Button, and Button had a better option. And, you know, he posted the telemetry or the graph or whatever you want to call it. And that is really, really piss poor judgment. And all I can tell you that, you know, the guy is a tremendous, tremendous racing talent. He really needs to look at Senna was a hero for him. And, you know, Schumacher has a lot of success. Or you can take anybody like Alain Prost. You know, Michael Schumacher, I'll mention his case because he is still racing. As much as I follow Formula One racing night and day, I do not ever recall an entourage of even his mom or dad at a race. I've only seen like one or two photos of his dad. And so he needs to learn from the very best, or if not the very best, the most successful drivers, how they achieved, how they came to the track. You know, this, who you deal with, who you live with, who you party with is your business. But when you come to a Formula One race, he needs to have he has a very good manager now, Didier Coton, who is very well respected. He was manager to Mika Hakkinen.
Right.
He needs to get some sound advice, you know. Otherwise, you know, for a talent like this, and I used to say this to a friend of mine about Montoya, that for a talent like Montoya to go out of Formula One without a championship or two, it's just a shame for that talent, you know. And I feel the same way about Hamilton.
Right. No, I agree. I thought it was very bizarre. But once again, he chose the correct decision by not talking to the press while he was hot-headed. Yet, on the other hand, he uses tweets to release some steam. And this was just the wrong thing to do. pretty bizarre for me, and I'm sure that Ron Dennis was fuming.
You have to look at it this way. You know, once upon a time when Roger Penske fired Paul Tracy, it was done after the season was over, and Paul Tracy's comment was, you know, there are no seats open now, so what am I going to do? I mean, you know, seats, he's not going to go to Ferrari. Red Bull is totally full. If there is some dispute with contract negotiation in McLaren's, McLaren makes him an offer that he cannot accept. Where is he going to go? Because I read somewhere that it was reported he was even pondering taking a year off. So he needs to be careful. You know, nobody walks on water. And with Jenson Button coming into that team, winning races, any Formula One team can win a world championship with or without a Schumacher, with or without a Senna, with or without a Hamilton. So one has to be careful.
Yeah, no, that's going to be a tricky situation, even though in the end, I'm pretty sure he'll stay with McLaren. Quickly, I want to briefly read a statement from Fernando Alonso that he put out after the race. It says, quote, "I'm fine, except my left shoulder hurts a bit. I went to the medical center immediately after the accident, but everything is all right. The pain only comes from the whiplash. I had no idea what happened. I had overtaken the two Saubers when I felt as though I had been run into by a train. Immediately after the impact, I stayed in the cockpit for a few seconds, but then there was the start of a fire, and the foam from the extinguishers meant I couldn't breathe. I tried to tell the team on the radio that I was all right, but I couldn't. Now I can say that, given the misfortune of having had an accident like this, I am lucky to be able to get back in the car in a few days. The level of safety of these cars is very high, and today we saw further proof of that. I'm not angry with Grosjean. He definitely didn't do it on purpose." So there you have it, a class act as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's getting down to a point in the season now where every point is always very important. But, you know, it's like he needs to find the guy who has the most potential to win the championship from him is Sebastian Vettel, I think.
I absolutely agree. No, yeah. Vettel's the big threat. You know, Mark Webber would have to pull a miracle out of his hat to get a championship. So we'll see what happens.
I'll tell you, as much as I respect Hamilton's talents, I will not be surprised if he fails to score in at least one or two races of the remaining on the schedule because of some run-in, which may or may not be his fault. But I just think it will be kind of a miracle for him to have a rest of the season where he's not in some schmazel.
Yeah, no.
And the victory for Jenson Button on a high note for McLaren gives them 12 victories at Spa, which equals the record currently, which was held by Ferrari, of course.
Wow. So that makes Ron Dennis happy.
Yeah, and this is the same track where Bruce McLaren gave his team their first Grand Prix victory in 1968.
That's correct.
Big day for McLaren.
Yeah, no, it was exciting. I really enjoyed this race, and I was looking forward to it. And I have to admit that I shed a little bit of a tear when I saw the beginning accident, because I knew that took out two great drivers that would have added to the excitement of this Grand Prix.
Yeah, plus the championship situation. And I thought for a second, you know, two title contenders are out. Maybe it's time for a red flag, and then they can, you know, if it's on the opening lap, they can get back to their backup car. But then I said, no, that's what they do in NASCAR, so.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I like the backup car.
No, but the rule is, I think applies only if your car is disabled on the opening lap, before the opening lap is over, and there is a red flag from what I remember.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, if the first lap is completed and the race is a red flag, I don't think they will allow.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else, Nasser?
No, sir. Your love is all we need in California.
That's just touching. We're going to take a quick break because we've got a great and wonderful motorsports mondial. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charonne region, sipping on Cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charonne. Opening in June 2012, Bassinon offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts. suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bassinode is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bassinode.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's BASSINAUD.com. Allons-y!
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the man himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards. Today we have GP2 and 3 from Spa, IndyCar action from Baltimore, nightlife in NASCAR Nation from Atlanta, and merger in the making in American sports car scene. But first, our favorite, Hoppe Doss. Feature race win for Swede Marcus Ericsson, and this is the first feature race win. He did win a race in his first year a few years ago in Valencia, but that was a sprint, you know, reverse grade victory. So congratulations to Marcus Ericsson. And, you know, we've been in touch with his fan club president. So I'm going to meet Marcus, his fan club president, and also a couple of his fans, and we'll do some sort of get-together and chit-chat with Marcus. James Collado, the rising star and rookie of the year, was second. Davide Valsecchi, one of the title contenders, was third. Huge crash at Eau Rouge for Nigel Melker, who is from Netherlands, but he is okay, and that is good news. He was flown to a hospital in Liège, and with no helicopter at the track, the restart was delayed. Josef Kral of Czech Republic took his first GP2 victory in the sprint race on Sunday. And this poor kid. Remember the year when Mark Webber took flight in Valencia?
Yep.
Same weekend, Josef Kral had a similar situation in the GP2 race, and then he missed a part of the season. So good to see him back, and congratulations to Josef Kral and the people, racing people of Czech Republic on his victory. And that was, of course, in the sprint race on Sunday. Great late race battle for second place between James Collado and cousin Felipe Nasr, who had started from pole after finishing eighth in race one. And I'm sure, but if you did not see the feature race, Felipe Nasr was ninth, and on the last corner, he was able to jump the guy who was in eighth, got eighth position, and then, you know, that gives him the pole position for the feature race. And in the, I'm sorry, into the sprint race. And then in the final lap of the sprint race, there was a big push and shove going on between James Collado, who was leading Felipe Nasr, but Felipe nudged him out of second on the run to the checkered flag and got second place, just like he did in feature race. James Collado now has a chance to become a rookie champion after both title contenders Valsecchi and Razzia failed to score on Sunday. And the interesting thing was Razzia got into a very high spin at the start, and one driver who tried to avoid him and also hit the barriers was Valsecchi himself. So the Brazilian Razzia and Italian Valsecchi are now tied for championship lead, 204 points. Collado is second on 160, two races at Monza and two races in Singapore is all that remains in the 2012 Hoppe Doss season. And Collado has now passed his teammate, our friend Esteban Gutierrez, for third place. So he's doing a very impressive job. Now we downshift to Hoppe 3, GP3. German Daniel Abt took his first win in the series. Antonio Felix da Costa was second, and Kiwi Mitch Evans third. Big accident for Robert Cregan. Both he and Melker drive for Thiago Monteiro's Ocean Racing team, but Cregan is also okay, which is good news. So a very expensive weekend for Ocean Racing. Race 2 was won by Matthias Lane of Finlandia. My apologies if I am screwing up his name. On the broadcast, they were calling him Laine or something like that, Matthias Laine. He's from Finland, another new GP3 winner. Portuguese da Costa was again second, and Connor Daly from Indiana was third. In the championship, Mitch Evans lead DaCosta. Monza is the final stop on the schedule. IndyCars from the streets of Baltimore. Ryan Hunter Ray's victory has forced a title showdown in the season finale at Fontana between the Florida driver and Will Power. The Australian enjoys a 17-point lead, but his performance on ovals has not been as impressive as on road courses. Power was sixth in Baltimore. His fellow Australian and Penske teammate Ryan Briscoe was second. Your homeboy Simon Pagenaud was third and Kiwi Scott Dixon fourth. The two-legged Rubinho completed the top five.
Now, can I ask you a question?
Please do.
The interesting, you know, now that we know that Romain Grosjean has been banned for Monza, some of the names that came up, of course, D'Ambrosio is the reserve driver, but some of the other names that may possibly get that drive was Rubinho.
Yes, his name has been mentioned, and it will be interesting to see. You know, Jerome D'Ambrosio, when he was driving in GP2 for Jenny Capital and all these people, there is a name for that. I think it's called Gravity Management. That's the company they own. And he was in their program, and he was not having a very good season in GP2. And so they took him out for a couple of races and put Romain Grosjean in his place to see if the problem was the car or the driver. Mm. So here is the world, you know, coming back to haunt Romain, that now the guy he replaced may replace him at Monza. And it's one of those situations, you know, if D'Ambrosio can get into the car, out-qualify his teammate, Mr. Raikkonen, just kind of like, you know, Gilles Villeneuve did when they gave him a chance in Formula One, he out-qualified the team's regular number two driver. This can really make your career. So let's see what happens.
Yep.
Okay, now we're going to downshift to Indy Lights. Another of your homeboy, Tristan Wautier, won the race to take the lead in the championship from his teammate, Esteban Guerrieri, who finished third. Second was Gustavo Yuakaman, and there was a lot of racing in the streets of Baltimore, American Le Mans. Star Mazda, they were also in the streets of Baltimore. Race one saw ninth pole position and seventh victory of the season for English rookie Jack Hawksworth. Connor DeFilippi was second. And you know, this kid, Jack Hawksworth, he's a rookie this year, first time in America, doing a very impressive job against second-year drivers. So I won't be surprised that if he does what he's doing now, continues in Indy Lights, and if that happens, he should expect a call from Mr. Ganassi or Mr. Penske.
Yeah.
Young man from Nazareth, Pennsylvania, Sage Karam took victory in the second race of the weekend. Hawksworth was second. Jack leads the championship with 342 points, and Sage Karam is second on 281. In the U.S. Formula 2000 series, and this is a series I'm also enjoying right now because, you know, quite a good bunch of talent is here. Matthew Brabham was one of the winners over the weekend and still leads the championship. Race one of the weekend was won by teammate and championship challenger Spencer Piggott. And we interviewed both these youths in the last 30-60 days. And interestingly, you know, courtesy of Mazda, if you win the U.S. Formula 2000 championship, you get a fully funded ride in Star Mazda. And if you win the Star Mazda series, courtesy of Mazda, again, you get a fully funded ride in Indy Lights. So there is hope for talent, you know, in Junior American Racing League, which is good. Okay, now here is some very, very interesting situation. Baku beckons. Jacques Villeneuve and Jos Verstappen will share a car in a street race in Baku, Azerbaijan. I think this is the first time we are talking about Baku and Azerbaijan on F1 Weekly. And if my, you know, I have some other interests apart from Formula One, believe it or not. If my history of oil is correct, the very first oil well in the world was drilled near Baku many, many moons ago. And the gentleman who's promoting this race, this will be done around the, you know, local parliament office or, you know, buildings. Mm-hmm. This is the same gentleman who had arranged races in the streets of Bucharest, Romania, which became very popular, and at one time British F3 also raced there.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Jacques Villeneuve. And they have, by the way, the Azeri Shashlik is very, very good. So I'm sure Jacques will have a good time.
That's excellent. Do you have any thoughts about American Le Mans Series and Grand Am merging together?
I don't know if we mentioned that, but there is supposed to be a press conference on Wednesday. People are saying that Mr. Don Panos, who is the founder and president of or the head honcho at American Le Mans, that he will sell the series, and which, you know, I hope it's done nicely, and this is good news for American sports car racing. But it's like, I'm going to tell you something. In 1985, when I arrived in Cali, the GTP series, IMSA GTP series, was a very strong series with Porsche and then Jaguar and then Toyota, and Nissan had a car that, you know, Jeff Brabham used to drive. So I have very good memories of that series. And it also had a very strong field in GTO, and that's where Willie T. Ribbs, Scott Pruitt, Tommy Kendall, they used to race in that series. So I'm all for more motorsports, better organized, better fields, and the more strong, the better it is. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, no, I think it's exciting. Nass, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And this is going to take us into the wrap-up, Nass. You know what
wrap
that...
Wrap it up. I'll take it.
And that means 50 words from the forum.
50 ways to leave your lover, okay?
Exactly, Nass. And this is one of the first ways I start, is by reading the forum to my lover, and they always seem to run away.
You don't start by hopping on the bus, Gus?
No. I refuse.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and take the first one. Are you ready, Nass?
Ready, steady, go, senor.
Okay. Kehe Sin says, Button turns up today and has a pleasant and undisturbed Sunday drive. Lewis learns that tweeting is a social activity, while Alonso thanks whatever he deems lucky that he still has a head. Are we going to wait until a disaster, until something is done to protect drivers from airborne cars?
Ponte 92, what a race. There is a reason this is my favorite track.
Neon Zapper, congrats to Jenson Button and McLaren for keeping Spa an outstanding race to watch.
Yay, fantastic race. Jenson Button is the only man this year to lead a race from start to finish.
Interraptor says, as far as the TV viewers know, Jenson could have left the track with the safety car to go and have a Stella. I can't recall seeing so little of a race leader. Massa seems unable to learn as Vettel overtook him twice at the same spot. And someone needs to explain Pastore when he is allowed to start, or next time he'll be driving a half a lap when the others start racing.
Ratham, Grosjean ruined several drivers' race. Congratulations, Jensen. Not race-related, but I enjoyed the podium interview format, and the fans love Kimi.
And finally, Leon Bray, good race. It's good to see they have replaced DC to create the required first corner mayhem. What is wrong with the Red Bulls? 16 kph slower, that the Force India's through the speed trap. Has anyone told them that you can't normally pass in the twisty bits?
And here's 50 words about the Belgian Grand Prix from yours truly, Desiree. First corner melee at the start left points leader Alonso holding his breath as Grosjean flew past his face, and Lewis dragging his tail and a piece of wing back to the paddock. Michael celebrated his 300th start, and Kimi responded with a ballsy downhill pass on the outside. Jensen buttoned up the win from lights to the checkered flag, and Seb looked generally happy to get second.
So there you have it. And you know what? I do like that new format. And, of course, we had Jackie Eakes asking the questions. Jackie's questions were a little bit long-winded. What do you think?
Yeah, but, you know, the thing, it shows the passion these people have, and it's very nice. I like very much what they are doing. And it was nice to see these young drivers also give him respect, you know.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. I enjoy it, and I like the questions right after the race. I think it's a beautiful format. Of course, we still have the post-race interview. So there you have it, Nass. All I have to say now is bon voyage to you, because I know you're off on a big jet airliner.
Yes, sir. Leaving on Wednesday and going to UK, meeting up with some friends and a good friend, our The official doctor of the F1 Weekly podcast will be there also, Dr. Mark Farrington. Looking forward to seeing Miguel for the first time on the way back. And I hopefully should be able to have a agreement with the, we have a couple of karting facilities in Karachi, so I'm really looking forward to launching some sort of a karting program back home next year, and let's see what happens. And hopefully we will do a Skype podcast from Karachi.
There you go. That'll be a first, actually, in the entire podcast industry.
Yes, and about time.
Yeah, because there are no podcasts emanating from Pakistan at this time.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Anyway, Nas, like I said, bon voyage. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Good night.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.